Broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network, you're locked in with the Scuttlebucks, Jeff Cameron, and Tom Lang. Tampa Bay Buccaneer Talk starts now. Here's ESPN Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron.
Welcome into the Scuttlebucks. Great to be with you, and also great to be joined by my cohort once again, Tom Lang. Welcome back. You feeling all right, buddy?
Hello, Tampa Bay.
Whatever it was, you sounded like ass when we were trying to do this last week.
Yeah, Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
Throat was on fire.
You were struggling, and you're feeling a little better now?
Yeah, I retreated to the Hacienda in Palm Harbor, Florida for a nice Thanksgiving, and nieces and nephews were staying in the house as well, and two of them were sick. So I've been perpetually kind of fighting off whatever this bug is, but I can at least communicate audibly, which is what people care about on a podcast.
So that's right.
Good to
go. And we are better able to communicate to you, the diehard Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan here on the Scuttlebucks, that the season is over. There it is, crystal clear. Let's get right after it. How about them apples? The loss to Atlanta, in essence, says goodnight now for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers playoff hopes, certainly. And it was on tenuous ground, to say the least. But with this loss, you can usher in talk of the offseason.
We'll talk to you in August. This has been the Scuttlebucks.
Have a good one, everybody.
It was fun for that little honeymoon period or distraction period. 2 weeks, you get two easy wins over AFC East teams and the Jets and the Dolphins. The Jets felt like a default win. Felt like both teams were trying to tank in that moment. Which is interesting because they tried hard against the Panthers this past weekend. The NFL is a really, really goofy league.
And then Jets try hard every week.
Well, they didn't try hard against us unless the defense was, you know, harkening back to 2001 for a weekend.
I was going
to
say, I felt like they played hard. They're just not any good.
That can be true, too. But I think Carolina's better than us. It's just a goofy, goofy league.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's all over, and that was a distraction period for us. Now the reality sets back in. You could feel good for a couple of weeks. Hey, Fitz, maybe he's the answer, right?
No.
Maybe he's the starting quarterback.
No, you know
how the delusional were down there.
That is crazy. I know when my mom called and said, you know, there's some thoughts here. Stop. The Dolphins and the Jets. He's garbage. No, we're done. Stop talking about this. A reasonably decent, okay, marginal backup. That's what he is. That's what you got. We're done here. Stop it.
Good Fitz can win you a game against a decent NFL team.
On a good day, Fitz can win you a game. There you go.
That's all you ask at your backup,
yeah,
right?
Sure, that he's able-bodied.
Rob Johnson was that way.
Long story short, you're now left with discussions about coaching. We'll have Lee DeKipper from JoeBucksFan.com come on the show and talk some about that. I mean, you are, right? You now have to discuss whether or not it's prudent to bring back Dirk Cutter, whether or not Mike Smith should have already been fired, whether or not your GM is going to be back, given that he is just kind of a lame duck GM right now with no extended contract. So you have a lot of things that you've got to iron out, that you got to get your ducks in a row, and you got to figure out where you're going as a franchise. On the one hand, if you fire Dirk Cutter, then once again, you're the franchise that fires everybody when things go south, and you do so in a hurry, making this not the most inviting job in the world. On the other hand, if you need to fire a coach that may or may not have lost the locker room and can't get everybody to play hard, then you do, regardless of what you've done previous.
Right, exactly. And as you said, I think it was 2 weeks ago, you know, the Matt Millen approach was the correct one, even though he needed to be fired. Listen, I understand we've drafted receivers, but we still
don't have a good one.
We still need one.
We still need him.
And there's Megatron, so you know what? I'm not going to be afraid to make this move just because I got all the other moves wrong. I'm going to go get that guy. And was it the right move? Hell yes, it was the right move. That's the debate here. And I think these past couple of weeks were stays of that discussion. Perhaps it allowed the Glazers to get their head right and go on a retreat somewhere, because Lord knows they didn't want to be in the stadium watching this product on Sunday in Atlanta. So we're going to have to return to the place we were just prior to the Jets game, which is, what direction do you want to take here, man? What kind of coach do you want to bring in? I know we had the Chucky discussion a few weeks back, but you got to have...
I actually don't want that.
Well, personnel decisions being the difference maker, right?
If
he comes in to coach, well, he'll infuse life. He'll get players to practice hard. He demands a certain level from you every day in practice, and he's going to get it, damn it, or you're going to be gone. but you don't want him running the draft. I mean, that's a completely different Gruden. That's a Gruden you'd like to stay home.
You know what's funny? If you think about a guy like Sean McVay, who I bring up every week on this podcast of the Rams, and how he has reinvigorated that franchise, but moreover, beyond just reinvigorating the franchise, he's obviously coached them well. They're winning football games. It's not just that, hey, they believe in this guy and they see a vision down the line and he's moving them toward. No, no, he's kicking ass. He has made Goff an actual, not just starting quarterback in this league, a good one.
Right, and you hear the reports coming out of L.A. this week that he gets them to the line so quickly and he's mastered the ability to audible at the line of scrimmage that Goff doesn't have to do much of the thinking at all. And that's, people were asking, is that a knock on Goff? Not yet. This is his first real year with a real coach in the NFL. I want my guy guiding my young quarterback as much as possible, taking the thinking process off the plate so he can go use his talents. Well, to me, that makes McVay's accomplishments all the better.
Well, and I guess the reason I bring up McVay in this situation is this. Now, let's be honest, people in Tampa Bay, for a second. Prior to Sean McVay getting that hire, did you have any idea who the hell Sean McVay was? Because I can tell you something right now that if you did, then maybe you were paying close attention in 2008 when he was on the Tampa Bay Bucs staff as a coach. But other than that, you had no idea who he was.
While he was still in high school.
I mean, it's crazy, right? He has coached with the Bucs. He was with the Florida Tuskers. I don't even know what that is. He was an assistant tight ends coach in Washington.
He didn't have the head man job for the tight end position.
No, he was the assistant tight ends coach. Later on, he got moved to tight ends coach.
Oh.
After a stellar campaign as the assistant tight ends coach.
Now you got him lined up.
That's right. And what's crazy is that he did that for 3 years. Now, this is all in his 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And at the young age of 28, 29, he becomes the Washington offensive coordinator. And it's the first time he's on anybody's radar because, A, he's that young, and people are going, well, who the hell is this guy? It's hard to know who you want, who you need in the NFL, because here's what I do know. We love to point at coaches and say, he can't coach. This guy's terrible. This guy's awful. He doesn't know what he's doing. Yes, sometimes there is evidence to suggest that a guy's in over his head. All of them, however, have the acumen. All of them have the knowledge, in-depth knowledge of the game that is requisite being a coach in the National Football League. You can't fake your way into that place. You can't sit through meeting after meeting and not know what the hell you're talking about from an X's and O's standpoint. So in the NFL, it's an awful lot about that interviewing process. I can look at a retread, but the Rams decided we're going to do the furthest thing from that because we've had one in Fisher forever, and he's just not getting it done, and how this guy continues to get opportunities, I don't know. We're going to go through the interview process. Well, he does.
As an Arsenal fan, I'm hoping that maybe Kroenke looks at that and says, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Arsenal, get the hell out of here.
Yeah, anyway, but sorry. So what they end up doing is in the moment say, well, let's just do the interviews. And they do them, and this guy wows the hell out of them. Out of nowhere, they're blindsided by that, and they go, "That, you know, guys, I don't really know if this is going to fly, but I'll hire a 30-year-old head coach. I'll do it. I'm so impressed with what he had to say, his vision, and what he thinks is possible. I'm going to do it." And look at these sons of bitches. So you just don't know. I don't know who I want to come here. Other than we can both name coaches that have had success
right
at various places that we think we like. And I'm ready to start vetting. I'm ready to start that process, but I don't have a guy.
I think the hard part is that you have to define a hierarchy within the organization.
That's the whole point. Yes. Your GM's not even in place, really.
And it has to be the Buccaneer way from here on out. You know, that's the thing. If you look at the way, and I don't like to use the Patriots because you have all-time great quarterback with an all-time great defensive mind and coach overall. So I don't know how well their system works because that guy hit a home run and the timing was perfect. Look at the Steelers. That's the organization I think you look at.
Well, that's a model, right.
For
that's
continuity,
yeah.
from the ownership on down. Everybody does what they are supposed to do, and everybody's on the same page. It was like the Atlanta Braves in the 90s. That whole organization, from general manager to manager of the big club, all the way down through the minors, you had a system that you stuck to, and that's the way it was going to be. And you're either our guy or you're not. With Tampa, we have a new system every 2 or 3 years.
I agree.
General manager, coach, everything. It's all
you got to find stability. But it's interesting because you bring up John Gruden. I'm going to bring this back up. John Gruden's the one who hired McVay. He saw something in McVay and liked him. And that's why Jay Gruden brought him on after John was long gone.
Sure.
Jay brought him in because John told Jay, this dude's for real. Well, you'd love to have that kind of a guy to turn to. And maybe it is John Gruden where you say, okay, listen, John, we don't think at this point we want you to be the head coach, but he loves the organization. Could you hire him in some sort of consultant role where you could say,
he offered to consult for free on Hard Knocks.
Well, I know. But in your Monday Night Football job, you interview coaches across this league all the time, in-depthly. You go to these organizations and see who are the up-and-comers. Because he does this in the broadcast constantly. He's always going, I'll tell you something. And he does his whole thing about the receivers coach or the special teams coach that he thinks is great. Clearly, he identified some coaches in his time that were up-and-coming and could do a good job. It's not just him. But there are others. I don't know. I mean, you need somebody. Oh, it's almost like a coach's firm, searching firm, like you have in college.
The Fired Football Coaches Association. it's a moving target. That's the hard part. Because the first domino to fall is what do you do with the general manager? And is the general manager who's brought in, or team president? I mean, if you want to do that, if you want to create another level of buffer between ownership and the actual team, whoever that person is going to be, will they be empowered to make the decisions about the people underneath them? Or are they brought in to consult with the Glazers to make the call? That's the first domino that falls here. It can't be fire the coach and then let's hire the replacement and then fire the GM after he was tabbed to find a new coach. It can't work that way. It has to work from the top down. And the model that worked the best in our franchise history, at least the part that I can remember, is when Rich McKay is essentially your GM and team president. And then you have coaches hired underneath Rich McKay.
Yeah.
I know that there was a falling out, but all I'm saying is that structure seemed to work the best. So perhaps you embrace that. And instead of worrying about who the damn coach is going to be, let's worry about who the front office is going to be run by. Because those are the guys that need to make the decision. Whoever, if it's light for an extension, then it's light. I don't care. But we have to know the answer to that. And I think that's what the next 6 weeks are about.
And in the interim, before we bring in Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan.com, I'd like to tell you a little bit more, Tom, about the Florida Tuskers. Little did you know about the Tuskers.
Jim or anybody. Haslett,
Jim Haslett was the head coach. They played at Tropicana. I had no idea of this.
Really? When?
2009.
It was a one-year trial?
United Football League, United States Football League. What is this? The American football team based in Virginia Beach, Virginia, originally. They began playing the United Football League in 2011.
Okay.
They played their home games at the Virginia Beach Sportsplex. The team succeeded the Florida Tuskers, a charter UFL franchise based in Orlando. They appeared in the first two UFL championship games, losing both times to the Las Vegas Locomotives. They eventually moved. They did play a season there at I had no idea.
Wasn't this the summer league? Remember when there was a summer league that came about and it was going to be NFL cast-offs and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I guess it had to have been.
That's probably the same thing. But I'm not sure of that.
By the way, it's kind of crazy. It should be known that their first season they were led by Brooks Bollinger.
Oh, Brooks!
This is great. We're learning all kinds of stuff on the Scuttlebucks, people. Man, this is what happens when you suck.
You know, they need that league to come back so Kaepernick can get employed, right?
Oh, man.
Because we went through the rosters of every team.
We did.
Was it 2 weeks ago? I think it was 2 weeks ago on a Friday. We went through all the two deep or the three deep in some cases.
You know who else was on that team? The Michael Spurlock.
Michael Spurlock.
My God, Tom, we have really had a fruitful beginning to the start of the Scuttlebucks today.
Get you some, San Francisco.
All right, Michael Spurlock. Only our diehard Buck fans are cheering with us right now at the name Michael Spurlock.
I hugged every stranger in my aisle.
To the house, sir.
I was there. I couldn't believe it. I hit the lottery. Every Bucks fan wanted to be there when it happened. I hit the lottery. I was there that day.
They put together a 6-0 undefeated season and won the championship. And I didn't know they existed. No idea.
That sounds like an obscure t-shirt or hat to really pursue and own.
I'm going
to
get it. Tropicana Field 2009, everybody.
Is the logo cool?
I don't know. Let's take a look.
Oh, they don't have it.
Oh, there they are. The Florida Tuskers logo. As you can imagine, it's a pig with the tusks and the whole deal. And they also have a different logo. This is incredible. I had no idea.
Can you educate the people of the Tampa Bay area on your boar sound effect?
I don't have it in me today. What is it? What is you know that? All right. We're off the rails on the Scuttlebucks.
They're not used to the Jeff Cameron show.
It's just very, very random. I don't know what a boar sounds like. I'm not familiar with boars. I mean, I've seen them.
Well, there was the boar that, you know, stormed the beach.
Which was awesome. That's still one of my favorite stories. Those people are chilling on the beach and the boar just runs out of the ocean.
Google that. Have yourself a laugh in the midst of a 4-7 campaign here.
These people are laying on a freaking beach and a boar jumps out of the ocean and charges through the camp. It's nuts. Lita Kipper, JoeBucksFan.com next.
Mothers love me, even ghosts. Girlfriends call from Cleveland. They will meet me anytime.
Avast ye scuttlebucks.
Welcome back, Scuttlebucks. All right, good times. We get to talk to Lita Kipper, JoeBucksFan.com, about our last place Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Woo! What's up, Lee?
Yeah, that's their residency the past decade or so, it seems like, isn't it?
Yeah, it hurts, man. Not last year, but 4-7 currently finds you in dead last in the NFC South, filled with teams with 8 wins, and well, the Falcons have 7. But yeah, it's a tough go, but it does all add up to some interesting questions now moving forward about the coaching staff, about whether or not Jameis Winston should play if healthy. This is, for all intents and purposes, it's a lost season. They're done at 4-7. And so the season is over, and nobody wants to hear that. But when you're sitting there, devoid of any kind of you don't have a good win, first of all. And you beat the Dolphins, and you beat the Jets, and you beat the Giants, and you beat the Bears.
NFL roadkill.
Yeah, all of them are terrible. And actually, your most impressive win may be that win over the Jets, who continue to play really, really hard every week, at least. But anyhow, the point is, you don't have a meaningful win, and now you've got, you know, games that aren't really mattering, that just kind of playing out the string. Do you think they play Jameis?
I think they do, but they shouldn't. As we talked about before we began our recording here, obviously we're recording this on Wednesdays for your listeners on Tallahassee, ESPN Tallahassee on Sundays. Earlier today, the news came out that both Ali Marpet and DeMar Dotson were put on the injury reserve list, ending their season. And given the fact that no one has said Jameis is 100% healthy, no one has said that. They said, oh, he's capable of throwing. No one said he's 100% healthy. Behind a makeshift offensive line, though I do have faith in Joe Hawley, who will be starting at center, I haven't heard word yet. And again, we're recording Wednesday. I haven't heard word yet who will be playing right tackle. My assumption is it will be Kevin Canfield. I have faith in those guys, but still, if makeshift line, some would argue it's not that great a line. That's a whole other subject. But why risk the franchise? And what I mean by the franchise is Jameis. Why risk him for nothing? I could understand that they're still in a playoff run. I could understand they beat the Falcons last Sunday, and they still had a prayer
right
of a wild card. That's off the table. It's gone. The history is over with. I mean, already they let go of Kevin Stocker to get the young guys more snap. That was earlier this week. And Stocker obviously has been a keystone of this franchise, for lack of a better word, for the better part of six to seven seasons. So they're clearly playing for the future now. And the future obviously is Jameis's right arm. The future is not this Sunday at Green Bay. It's not Monday Night Football against the Falcons. Future is next season and beyond. And so I can understand if Cutter does play Jameis in the sense that, you know, oh, it's about competition, it's about wins, and oh, by the way, underneath the surface, it's about saving people's jobs. But you know what? The best way to get fired is put the franchise quarterback behind a makeshift offensive line for no good reason and watch him get blasted. That's a good way to get fired.
Well, and a big problem this year that led to the hits on Jameis was the fact that they haven't been able to run the ball. That's not going to get any better. given this set of circumstances. So you're going to put them behind a makeshift offensive line that was already struggling to block when they were healthy. That's not going to happen now. In the run game, he's going to be a sitting duck. And there is a part of me that would like to see Jameis play, because I'd like to see if he is healthy and he can get back to making the throws he made for each of the last two seasons prior to this one. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see him kind of repair to some degree, a shaken image, if you will, because the last time we saw him play, he wasn't playing well. And so it would be nice to see him play well again and remind you and remind everybody just how special he is. But it's not necessary, and it hardly seems to be a wise decision. So it'll be curious to see if he plays, whether it's this week against Green Bay or the following week against Detroit. My hunch is like yours, though, that if he is given clearance from a health standpoint, he's going to play, because he's wanted to play the whole time he's been hurt. So he's certainly going to play if they give him clearance. Mentality. Yeah.
You love that attitude. You love that. But, like I wrote this Wednesday morning on JoeBucksFan.com, Jameis won't like being told to sit down, but I don't like going to the dentist every 6 months either. But you do it.
Hey, some things you got to do. My next question to you would be, if the head coach is going to be here next year or not, and if he is he going to be making changes to his staff? This defense is on a historically sad pace to set records for futility.
Well, if your listeners have not heard this or read this yet, I hope they are sitting down and away from sharp and blunt objects. Right now, Mike Smith's defense is far worse than Lovie Smith's defense when it comes to passing. Far worse. Like average of 50 yards worse. And that's frightening to think about. As much as I like Mike Smith as the person, class act, good dude, I cannot see how they can bring him back. And Dirk Koetter is loyal to a fault. So if Dirk Koetter comes back, he's got to make some changes. He has to. And the first one has to be, as much as he's buddy-buddy with Mike Smith, like, Mike, I'm sorry, we got to change things up. It's just not getting the job done. And there's no way you can justify what he's doing. And Mike Smith today, Wednesday, he said, hey, if you're going to blame anybody, start with me. Well, we are. I'm sorry, Mike, but we are. I mean, that was atrocious what we saw at Atlanta. And then, Mike Smith said, well, we couldn't really put Brent Grimes on Julio Jones because, if we were playing man defense and we know where Julio Jones was, then we could do that. Come on. There's all kinds of junk defenses you can come up with to try to slow Julio Jones down. And I'll just throw one out there right away. And I wrote about this Sunday night. How about putting Lavonnie David on him at the line of scrimmage and slowing his ass down? Yeah, I guarantee you Lavonnie David will create a hole in the middle of the defense, but guess what? I'd rather have Tevin Coleman beat me than Julio Jones racking up 250 yards.
Well, and part of me for much of this year has made the case that Mike Smith, from an X's and O's standpoint, has proven himself as a good football coach. I do think he is a good defensive coordinator. I think a lot of the Bucs' problems are personnel related. I think they got some personnel related problems here, both in the secondary, but in particular off the edges. And we all know, if you give a competent NFL quarterback time to throw the football, and oh, by the way, he happens to be throwing the ball to arguably the physically most gifted receiver in all of football in maybe the last 10 years, you're going to get hurt. And Matt Ryan is better than adequate. Matt Ryan's good, and Julio Jones is great. And that's what's going to happen if you can't get pressure on the quarterback. Now, that said, that would be my defense of Mike Smith. But I've been very unhappy with what we've seen. And the answers to those kinds of questions that you asked and that the reporters asked after the game were not met with any sort of competence. Those answers are that of a desperate man searching for an answer to a question he doesn't know the answer to. And it hurts to hear it. So maybe the answer, maybe just for optics' sake, maybe just to get to some new eyes looking at the problem here, maybe the answer is to move on from him.
Well, Mike Smith, I can say, is a hell of a linebackers coach, both in his history and current position. I mean, look at the linebackers he's developed with the Bucs. Obviously, Quan Alexander was already here, but what he's done with Beckwith is incredible. Lavonnie David's having arguably his best season he's ever had. And I credit that to Mike Smith. In Mike Smith's history, he's excellent with linebackers. So I'll give him credit for that. But if you're the Blazers and you're trying to sell season tickets and you're trying to sell marketing opportunities and corporate advertising on down the line, how do you justify bringing back the defensive coordinator of arguably the worst defense in the league. That's a hard sell. That's a real hard sell. And, you know, maybe the Glazers give him a job in the front office or some other position, but something's got to be changed there. Something has to be changed. And to be fair, like you said, they don't have a pass rush. They have none, unless you count Gerald McCoy. And to expect your defensive tackle to get 10 sacks, that's, you know, come on. So, I mean, you adjust with what you have. And like Michael Lombardi, former NFL executive, Bill Belichick disciple, John Gruden disciple, Al Davis disciple, you know, he said on his Ringer podcast this week, couldn't Dirk Cutter get on the headset, you know, maybe early in the third quarter and say, hey, Mike, it's time to start doubling Julio Jones.
Well, let's extend that out then, because I have real questions about Dirk Cutter, and I have, you know, since the start of the season, even going back to last year. Does he deserve to come back?
You could make arguments both ways. You really could. Valid arguments. I'm leaning to bringing him back only for this reason. I mean, outside of Marty Schottenheimer winning 12 games, I can't remember the last time a coach was run with his first losing season. Granted, he won last year. There were questions last year. Some of those questions linger. I'd give the guy a chance to fix things. I would, and mainly because of this reason. Granted, you know, 2 years gone. Lovey, 2 years gone. Mm-hmm. Before that, Raheem, 3 years gone.
Yeah, Carousel.
What kind of candidates are you going to be able to get to come in here? Let's say you run Cutter, and they're going to say, wait a minute here. I'll have one losing season. You're going to throw me
right
out of the office?
Yeah, no, I knew. So that, that's the answer.
The compensation for that is to overpay a coach. And so, yeah, you can make arguments both ways. You know, Cutter always says, hey, you know, come at me. You know, we're not doing a good job coaching. He says that very often, unfortunately. We're not doing a good job of coaching. And, you know, like Bill Parcells said, you are what your record says you are. So, no, he has not done a good job coaching this year. But then again, like I said, he won 9 games. Something Lovey didn't do. Something Schiano didn't do. And, oh, by the way, Raheem was run not just because he lost 10 games in a row after winning 10 games. He was run because the locker room was poisoned. Some suggest, shall we say, illegal activities were going on.
Well,
people define whatever they want with that.
But let me ask you this, because there's a couple of problems here. On the one hand, I completely agree. The message you're sending to any potential head coach is that that's not an organization you want to go to. They're unstable,
exactly,
and they're quick to fire. On the other hand, I always say this, losses happen for a reason, and while you may have chalked them up in your mind ahead of time that, hey, we're going to lose this game to Atlanta and we're going to lose this game to the Packers or the Lions or whomever you want to talk to, when you actually see how they happen, how they come about, it elicits an emotion and a frustration and a reaction. And so we all knew, and you and I knew, we did the podcast together last week, that the Falcons were going to beat the Bucs. I'm surprised it wasn't a lot worse. Frankly, if they hadn't turned the football over in that one crucial moment of the game, it would have been worse. Anyhow, the point is, we knew that loss was coming. But every time I looked up and I saw Julio Jones running free and catching yet another pass, I got pissed about it, even though I knew that L was coming. Well, guess what? I've got a good sense that the vast majority of these remaining games are also losses. And if you take those games and you couple them with the one against the Falcons just this past Sunday, well, you're going to be looking at 4-12. And at 4-12, fans are furious because even though they know those losses are coming, the sound of 4-12 and the piling up effect and the way those losses occur are going to elicit an emotion. And if I take that evidence coupled with a guy that hasn't always been able to get the team to practice hard, which we've seen documented.
That's
a problem. That's hard to defend. I don't know that I can bring you back if I can't trust that you can compel these men to practice hard, at the very least give their best effort in freaking practice. I don't know how I can tab you to lead me next year.
That's one of the things. If they bring Cutter back, the Glazers and Jason Light have to sit down with him, very much like what happened with the Rams and Dick Vermeil. When Dick Vermeil returned to the NFL, he had a couple of really bad seasons, and they sat him down and basically said, look, this is the way things are going to be. It's your choice. Either you adjust it with the changes or you resign. Your choice. And he chose to adjust, and they win a Super Bowl. Now, I'm not saying Dirk Cutter's going to win a Super Bowl next year, but they should sit him down like, okay, here are some changes. Number one, quit babying the players. Quit babying these guys. Three quarters of the NFL, they have much harder practices. And, oh, by the way, they'll win more than 4 or 5 games. three quarters of the NFL. So quit naming the players. You got to make a change of defense, Mike Smith. If you want to, if you want an in-house promotion, okay. Mike Smith can't return. There, and I'm sure there are other elements you'd have to look at.
Strip him of play-calling duties. You could strip him of play-calling duties and bring in an OC.
Yeah, that might be another one. That might be another one. You know, and again, I don't know what Todd Monken did with Oklahoma State. If that was Gundy calling the plays, or it was Todd Monken, or when he was at Southern Miss, if he was calling the plays. I don't know that. That's something I got to research. But if he has experience calling plays, even if he doesn't, it can't be much worse than what Cutter is doing. Now, to be fair with Cutter, and I've always said this, a lot of people, they go bananas on Cutter's play calling. I'm not saying it's wrong. I refrain from doing that only because I'm not seeing what he's seeing, the tendencies of the defense. So I got to be fair about that. And obviously, you know, I could sit up in the press box and scream, throw O.J. Howard down to the seam. And it might sound good, but maybe the defense is stacked where that you're going to throw a pick when you try to play. So I got to be fair with that. However, there are some questions. There's no doubt about it. Now, Cutter said something Monday that I thought was very interesting. And almost whitewashed the fourth down call. You know, when they tried to hit Cameron Brait
on
fourth down late with 7 minutes to go. You know, Cutter was saying, hey, I had to score a touchdown. It wasn't just 2 yards I needed. I needed a touchdown. And the more I thought about that, the more I thought he was on point. He didn't trust his defense. What he was saying was, if I didn't score quickly enough, you know, Atlanta was going to get the ball back and they're going to score. I needed the ball back for the last shot to win the game. And you know what? That's exactly what Atlanta did. They took the ball, you know, took over on downs, ate up 5 minutes of the clock, scored with a two-minute warning, right before the two-minute warning, boom, game ender. And so Cutter was actually right in a sense that they needed a quick 7 points to ensure they got the ball back later in the game.
Yeah, I would say, Lee, real quick, I don't have a problem with him as a play caller. He's okay as a play caller.
Yeah, okay.
I'm taking stuff off of his plate, first of all, is what I'm doing if he's returning. And then secondly, his time management skills are ass sorry. So we've seen that play out all year long. So there are problems situationally that I have a problem with him on. Okay, that's fine. Every fan's got their gripe. This is less about the actual play calls and more about taking something off of his plate, allowing him to focus on other aspects of running the team if he comes back. Well, it's certainly going to be interesting, buddy. I hate that we're in this predicament where you have these games that remain and they really don't add up to much. There are some things that we can watch closely that maybe will help dictate terms for what's going to happen moving forward, whether guys are still on this team, certain coaches and players, et cetera. I guess the next thing to be looking for is if Jameis Winston plays, does he play well? Do they play well around him? Do they play inspired? Does he look to be healthy? And we'll maybe get our answer this week. Always great to talk to you, buddy.
Same here, Jeff. Always have a blast.
All right, man. Lita Kipper, JoeBucksFan.com. Yeah, Tom, I think you and I agree that there are times where Cutter has called very good games and had some things there that when Jameis was hurt, he couldn't hit and didn't hit. Whether he was hurt or not, he just didn't hit certain plays that were schemed open and were good play calls. Certainly Fitz isn't going to consistently hit him. So it's not always really about play calling with him. I think he coaches scared far too often. I'm not sure it doesn't – I got to be careful. I don't – from what I could tell on Hard Knocks, I'm not sure that relationship with Jameis and he is where it needs to be.
Yeah, that's fair. No, I think he's called some good games and we chalk them up as bad losses. I thought New Orleans he called well. I thought Minnesota was called okay. You know, if you hit that throw to DeSean Jackson, that scheme wide open, that's a different ball game. And we know Zimmer likes to pucker up. That's going to be a problem for them in the playoffs. That dude coach is scared too.
Yeah.
I thought the Miami game he called exceptionally well in the first half. Then he got scared in the second half. But we've had this discussion before. Dirk Cutter, the head coach, is failing Dirk Cutter, the play caller, because now he's worried about losing the game. And so everything about the way he calls the game changes. And if you look at the way, and I've harped on it for weeks and weeks and weeks, so I'll give you the short version. But if you look at the way he manages the clock at the end of halves and games, third down situations.
Yes.
Why are we kicking a 45-plus yarder with a kicker that we know can't make the kick? Decisions like that.
Oh, it goes back, yes.
At the expense of the whole team. And he's the head coach. You know, if he was just the offensive coordinator and all he had to worry about was game planning. And, oh, well, they threw more zone at us than man. How many times have we heard that? Well, we didn't expect them to be in these coverages as much.
Right.
Well, how about you worry about those countermeasures and those counter moves?
Right.
Cool. That's great. But he's not. He's the head coach. So something's got to give here. If you're going to be able to manage the defense, get on the horn and say, Mike, as Lee was talking about, all right, listen, I know
my
game plan.
This ain't working.
Julio has a $160, and there's still 20 minutes to go in this game.
Isn't that funny? I love this conversation, by the way, because football can sometimes very well be a very simple game. And it can also be incredibly complicated, and we love to be stats guys and X's and O's guys and get into those measures and how there's an equal and opposite reaction and all these other things that we talk about. But that guy is a really good player, and he is killing us.
Sure.
We're done here. We're done here. That you can take anybody you want away, by the way, in a football game. You can take them away. Now, at the expense of something else, true, as Lee noted. But I'm going to make a guy who's not nearly as talented and explosive as Julio Jones beat me. I'm not going to allow that guy, who we've easily identified beforehand as the biggest threat on their offense, to come in and kill me.
Yeah, sure. Let Sanu go for $150 or Austin Hooper.
I'll take my chances that we'll have a better chance of covering him.
Now, the one thing
singles.
Again, the one thing I will say about what Mike Smith did this past weekend, I mean, he tried to blitz like crazy. And we are personnel deficient.
Well, that's my point about it's not all on him. We have some personnel issues.
But I don't even mean just about edge rushers. I mean, when you don't have the personnel to the point now that you're going to have Sanu on a linebacker, I mean, what the hell are you supposed to do in those situations? How many times did you see and have you seen this season where on a third down, a quarterback makes a simple pitch and catch read, and for some freaking reason, we have a linebacker on a receiver?
And you're saying, well, that's not going to work.
Boy, that's a depth concern that we have.
We're going
to have to have a
Herculean effort out of him.
I mean, you ever see a corner line up next to Gerald McCoy on the line? No, but that's what it's akin to with the freakish athletes there are at the NFL level.
Yeah, it's frightening. Well, let's go back, wrap it up, give our thoughts on this upcoming game, and also, I guess, you want to get into the good, the bad, all that good stuff?
Well, you hit the sounder. That kills 20 seconds so we can smile for a minute.
It is a fun
good
sounder.
Good music.
Yeah, we'll come back and do that next with the Scuttlebucks.
Sieging the Bay, one topic at a time. The Scuttlebucks return now on JoeBucksFan.com.
Wrap it up, the Scuttlebucks. You know, I'm curious what you'll say for merriment in misery, my friend. Before we get to it, we always like to remind you, and we are very fortunate, we appreciate the fine folks at FanRetreat.com. Why don't you check them out? Go to FanRetreat.com and learn more about our friends there because, well, there's a couple reasons. First of all, the Auto Nation Cure Bowl is coming up in just a short time, and you can buy tickets to the game and also donate to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation today with FanRetreat. Get your tickets, lodging, plane tickets, and more. You're not going to the game, no problem. Flights and hotels booked on the page also go towards the cause. Enjoy your traveling for the cure. Go to FanRetreat.com. Of course, FanRetreat, one-stop shop where you can purchase event tickets and travel. And lowest priced tickets anywhere just about. Check FanRetreat.com compared to SeatGeeks, for example, or StubHub. You'll find 95% of FanRetreat.com tickets are cheaper. That's a good thing. Use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code at FanRetreat.com. That's Joe Bucks Fan.
Use the code. They did very well, did Fan Retreat, which with the Florida Classic, which was a good game. Unfortunately, the Tallahassee side didn't come up.
Yeah, it didn't come
with
up
the win.
Victorious. Yeah, good game. So our thanks to Fan Retreat for sponsoring the Scuttlebucks. All right, merriment and misery. Cue it up, buddy.
And now, merriment and misery.
Such a happy song.
Much needed.
All right, well, I'll go first. This is both the merriment and the misery. I'll explain. The misery is Julio Jones, 12 receptions, 253 yards, and 2 touchdowns. The merriment is that I got to watch a guy go for 12-253, and as a football fan, I got to tell you, it's something to behold. You just don't see that every day.
Yeah, you see him get out of his break and break ankles while doing so, and then fully extend like Neo over the plane of the end zone and touching the pylon.
Dude's ridiculous and huge, and it's a crime they haven't figured out a way to use him better and more consistently in Atlanta this entirety of the season, but they sure found a way just in time to face the Bucs.
Oh, of course they did. Oh, yeah. Of course they did.
You know what they found? They found the film going, this guy, he's going to let us do this? Okay.
All right, I'll start with merriment, short and sweet. Thankful to be back on the Scuttlebucks. Was sick last week.
Yeah,
still fighting
you, buddy.
a little bit.
Yeah.
But there you go. That's short. The misery, the offensive line. Listen, not even the injuries. Not even the injuries in the long-term issues they have with Dotson and Marpet. They're not going to be playing
really,
the rest of the year.
I like Marpet. That's a shame.
Yeah, but the offensive line, when it comes to run blocking,
they've been awful.
Awful.
So they've been awful all
the
year.
The Sweezy Marpet center right guard experiment failed. It failed miserably. And then Pam Feel and Evan Smith have been rotating in and out left guard the entirety of the season.
Yeah.
This O-line has been pretty good at pass protection. I've been okay with what they've done in pass protection, but anytime we try and run, whether it be our outside zone or whether it be something right up the middle, good God, they're bad.
And one thing I'll say is that, you know, that's admirable that you're pretty good in pass protection. The problem is if you have virtually no threat to consistently run the ball, mm-hmm. even if you block it up in the passing game, they don't have an inkling towards having to be honest. So they just play it, and actually you have time, but they are able to cover longer than most defenses are because they don't respect that there's any chance you're going to run the ball.
Sure, which is why Fitzpatrick was able to break off a couple this weekend.
Yeah.
Because they're playing man. Screw you. Here's your 9 yards for Fitzpatrick. Good luck putting together 80-yard drives with any consistency.
Right, they don't care.
And that's where I think Cutter, you know, deserves some credit because he schemed his ass off with a one-dimensional game and a backup quarterback the last few weeks. But we had that discussion last segment about Cutter the coordinator versus Cutter the head coach.
Head coach, yeah.
There's a lot of responsibilities for a head coach. It's nice that you call some nice plays and you have some consistency there, but there's more misery than merriment. I don't think anybody would question that at this point.
Well, it's really hard to find. You know, I'm sitting back thinking, what am I going to use for this? You know, I guess every week I could say that I'm really, really, in terms of the merriment, happy about Patrick Murray.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
I mean, I found one. I mean, we got it. At the beginning of the season, the misery was always the kicker. And now I think the one constant is Patrick Murray. He's pretty good. Pretty damn good.
Yeah. And you know, the odd thing, too, I'm talking on the whole because this has been a couple of weeks since I've been on the Scuttlebucks. But the run game was okay out the gates this weekend. They found some things
early.
And then it seemed like, and Schlereth was right on during the broadcast.
By the way, he's much better at that than he ever was talk show host.
I mean, Dick Stockton right away, too. He had an error within 5 seconds of the broadcast.
Yeah, my man.
He was great. And he's an all-time great.
Yeah, but he hasn't been in a long time.
Pack it in.
Call it a day.
Yes, indeedy. But we get in the red zone, and then it's throw. You really want to do that with Fitz? I mean, is that what we want to do here?
So, you can't run. I mean,
part of me understands that it's been a mess. It's been a total mess. But a lot of the mess is due to details and not just the injuries and not just the personnel.
Weird with the Bucs, they're -39 in point differential. And you'll find that a lot of bad teams are -39 or thereabouts in point differential. But you look all over the league, there are teams that you would have never guessed are far worse off in that category. Obviously, San Francisco at -97, but you know, the Bears are -75, the Giants are -95, -83 for the Broncos, -105 for the Colts, -115 for the Dolphins, whom we beat. So there are teams far worse off, at least in terms of point differential, but yet the Bucs are going to finish with those same records, right? They're going to go 4-12, 5-11.
Yeah, I think so. You set the over-under at 5 for, you know, the total wins for that.
At this point, I'm competitive and I like to see my team win and not lose, just like everybody else. But in truth, I like higher draft picks at this point, too.
But, you know, this is where the NFL is crazy because if a couple of things go your way in the first 2 months of the season, you're looking at a game under or over 500 right now and in the thick of things instead of where you are, which is completely out of it. And that's frustrating. There's no doubt about that. But this team, make no mistake, had expectations of a double-digit win season.
Yeah, I thought 10-6 seemed reasonable.
It wasn't a 9-10 and 6, 11-5. And I, when we did the season preview, I thought it cost us a game because we didn't have the bye week. And that's the other thing now. It's not just attrition of the injuries that we know about, but these guys are all going to be playing 16 straight weeks. And as Dirk rightly pointed out, that doesn't mean anything until we get to week 11. Well, we passed that. We're a couple of weeks past that now. So fatigue's going to be a factor down the stretch. I think it's time to
stop. Motivation, fatigue, injuries. This is a nightmarish ending in the making.
Yes, we are approaching the period in this Scuttlebucks year one endeavor where forget the coaching discussions, because it's all about individual performances and what looks good to you as we build toward 2018.
That's why I say if Jameis comes back and they do play him, I want to see that he's healthy. I'm still working to get information on that I'll share on the Scuttlebucks. If he's 100% healthy, not cleared to play.
Right.
He was cleared to play when he was hurt earlier this year, which was dumb. I want to know that he's 100% healthy. If he's not, I want to make sure we're not playing him. And then B, if he is 100% healthy, I want to see if he can play pretty well. Now, given the circumstances, no run game, mounting injuries, et cetera, can you play pretty well if you do come back?
Oh, can you play pretty well for a couple of weeks? Because I think we want to work out Griffin at some point here, right?
Yeah.
So we know what the hell our backup situation is next year. That's got to be on the pecking order of things to figure out. Like, I'm not 100% on board with the way the Giants did Eli Manning, but if you believe some reports
but you don't believe Geno Smith can play.
Agreed, but they want to try out the Webb kid too.
He can't play?
Understood. But apparently the initial offer was, if you want to continue the streak, play the first halves of these games.
Yeah, and he said, screw that. Either I play or I don't.
Which I'm in the middle about.
Well, no, what I would
say, it's a lost freaking season, Eli. Spare yourself the 30 minutes each week.
Yeah, but if they come to you and say, we'd like to play the young guys, but hey, we're aware of the streak, so we're going to let you play that first half. I also don't think that's the way you handle that. You say, you're our starter, Eli. And when the game gets out of control, you say, now listen, we get down 2-3 touchdowns in these games like we've been doing lately.
Sure.
We're going to see what the kids can do. But you don't phrase it the other way.
Sure. No, you see what fair I'm point. That's yeah. the much better way to phrase
That's
it.
That's the better way to yeah. phrase it. You know?
If we're down two scores.
We need to protect you. We're gonna see what these kids
right.
can do.
Even though we're going to trade you. You know?
Well, I'm just saying, that's the way. It's a respectful yes. way of dealing with a two-time Super Bowl champion.
But still, if the streak means that much, go play your half of football. What are you doing? What are you doing? You need as much tread on the tire as possible for your next situation, Eli.
Yeah,
that's why I think with Griffin, we need to listen. Let's figure out whether or not we need to go draft somebody.
That's where we're at. We're going to get some reps for Griffin.
Yes. Yes, that's precisely where we're at.
Brutal. For Tom Lang, I'm Jeff Cameron. Thanks so much to Lee DeKipper, who joined us earlier.
Merriment.
Thank you. Yeah, that's merriment and misery right there. There you go. Thanks for listening to the Scuttlebucks, everybody. We really do appreciate it. We'll be back with you next week.